Richard was still upset about the loss of his bag. The Lord Rat Speaker remained unmoved. He stated boldly that the rat, Master Longtail, had said nothing at all about returning Richard's things, just that he was to be taken to market. Then he told Anesthesia that she was taking the Upworlder to the market and that, yes, it was an order, and to stop snivelling and get a move on. He told Richard that if he, Lord Ratspeaker, ever saw him, Richard, again, then he, Richard, would be in a great deal of trouble. He reiterated that Richard did not know how lucky he was, and, ignoring Richard's request that he return Richard's stuff, or at least the wallet, he led them to a door and locked it behind them. Richard and Anesthesia walked into the darkness, side by side. She carried an improvised lamp, made of a candle, a tin, some wire, and a wide-mouthed glass lemonade bottle. Richard was surprised how quickly his eyes became used to the near darkness. They seemed to be walking through a succession of underground vaults and storage cellars. Sometimes he thought he could see movement in far corners of the vaults, but whether human or rat or something else altogether, it was always gone by the time they reached the place it had been. When he tried to talk to Anesthesia about the movements, she hissed him to silence. He felt a cold draft on his face. The rat girl squatted without warning, put down her candle lamp, and tugged and pulled hard at a metal grill set in the wall. It opened suddenly, sending her sprawling. She motioned Richard to go through. He crouched, edged through the hole in the wall. After about a foot, the floor stopped completely. "Excuse me," whispered Richard. "There's a hole here." "It's not a big drop," she told him. "Go on." She shut the grill behind her. She was now uncomfortably close to Richard. "Here," she said. She gave him the handle of her little lamp to hold and clambered down into the darkness. "There," she said. "That wasn't that bad, was it?" Her face was a few feet below Richard's dangling feet. "Here, pass me the lamp." He lowered it down to her. She had to jump to take it from him. "Now," she whispered. "Come on." He edged nervously forward, climbed over the edge, hung for a moment, then let go. He landed on his hands and feet in soft, wet mud. He wiped the mud off his hands onto his sweater. A few feet forward, and Anesthesia was opening another door. They went through it, and she pulled it closed behind them. "We can talk now," she said. "Not loud, but we can, if you want to." "Oh, thanks," said Richard. He couldn't think of anything to say.
"So, you're a rat, are you?" he said.
She giggled, like a Japanese girl, covering her face with her hand as she laughed. Then she shook her head and said,
"I should be so lucky. I wish. Nah, I'm a rat speaker. We talk to rats."
"What, just chat to them?"
"Oh, no. We do stuff for them. I mean..."
And her tone of voice implied that this was something that might never have occurred to Richard unassisted.
"There are some things rats can't do, you know. I mean, not having fingers and thumbs and things. Hang on."
She pressed him against the wall suddenly and clamped a filthy hand over his mouth. Then she blew out the candle. Nothing happened. Then he heard distant voices. They waited in the darkness and the cold. Richard shivered. People walked past them, talking in low tones. When all sounds had died away, Anesthesia took her hand from Richard's mouth, relit the candle, and they walked on.
"Who were they?"
asked Richard. She shrugged. "It don't matter," she said.
"Well, then what makes you think that they wouldn't have been pleased to see us?"
She looked at him rather sadly, like a mother trying to explain to an infant that, yes, this flame was hot too. All flames were hot. Trust her, please.
Come on, she said. I know a shortcut. We can nip through London Above for a bit.
They went up some stone steps, and the girl pushed open a door. They stepped through, and the door closed shut behind them. Richard looked around, puzzled. They were standing on the embankment, that miles-long walkway which the Victorians built along the north shore of the Thames, covering the drainage system and the newly created district line of the underground, and replacing the stinking mudflats which had festered along the banks of the Thames for the previous 500 years. It was still night, or perhaps it was night once more. He was unsure how long they had been walking through the underplaces and the dark. There was no moon, but the night sky was a riot of crisp and glittering autumn stars. There were streetlights, too, and lights on buildings and on bridges which looked like earthbound stars, and they glimmered, repeated, as they were reflected with the city and the night water of the Thames. It's fairyland, thought Richard. Anesthesia blew out her candle, and Richard said, Are you sure this is the right way?
Yes, she said, pretty sure.
They were approaching a wooden bench, and the moment he set eyes on it, it seemed to Richard that that bench was one of the most desirable objects he had ever seen.
Can we sit down?
He asked.
Just for a minute.
She shrugged. They sat down at opposite ends of the bench.
On Friday, said Richard,
I was with one of the finest investment analysts in London.
What's an investment anna thing?
It was my job. She nodded, satisfied.
Right. And?
Just reminding myself, really.
Yesterday, it was like I didn't exist anymore to anybody up here.
That's because you don't, explained anesthesia. A late-night couple, who had been slowly walking along the embankment toward them, holding hands, sat down in the middle of the bench between Richard and anesthesia and commenced to kiss each other passionately.
Excuse me, said Richard to them.
The man had his hand inside the woman's sweater and was moving it around enthusiastically, a lone traveller discovering an unexplored continent.
I want my life back, Richard told the couple.
I love you, said the man to the woman.
But your wife, she said, licking the side of his face.
Fuck her, said the man.
Don't want to fuck her, said the woman and giggled drunkenly. Want to fuck you.
She put a hand on his crotch and giggled some more.
Oh, come on, said Richard to anesthesia, feeling that the bench had started to become a less desirable neighbourhood.
And they got up and walked away. Anesthesia peered back, curiously, at the couple on the bench who were gradually becoming more horizontal. Richard said nothing.
Something wrong?
Asked anesthesia.
Only everything, said Richard.
Have you always lived down there?
Nah, I was born up here,
she hesitated.
You don't want to hear about me.
Richard realized, almost surprised, that he really did.
I do. Really?
She fingered the rough quartz beads that hung in a necklace around her neck, and she swallowed.
There was me and Mum and the twins, she said,
and then she stopped talking, her mouth clamped shut.
Go on, said Richard. It's all right. Really it is. Honest.
The girl nodded. She took a deep breath, and then she began to talk, without looking at him as she talked, her eyes fixed on the ground ahead of her.
Well, Mum had me and my sisters, but she got a bit funny in the head. One day I got home from school and she was crying and crying and she didn't have any clothes on and she was breaking stuff, plates and stuff. But she never hurt us. She never did. A lady from the social services came and took the twins away and I had to go and stay with my aunt. She was living with this bloke. I didn't like him. And when she was out of the house...
The girl paused.
She was quiet for so long that Richard wondered if she had finished. Then she began once more. Anyway, he used to hurt me. Do other stuff. In the end, I told my aunt, and she started hitting me, said I was lying, said she'd have the police on me. But I wasn't lying, so I ran away. It was my birthday.
They had reached the Albert Bridge, a kitsch monument spanning the Thames, joining Battersea to the south with the Chelsea end of the embankment. A fairy tale bridge hung with thousands of tiny white lights.
I didn't have anywhere to go, and it was so cold, said Anesthesia, and she stopped again. I slept on the streets. I'd sleep in the day when it was a bit warmer and walk round at night just to keep moving. I was only 11, stealing bread and milk off people's doorsteps to eat. Hated doing that, so I started hanging around the street markets, taking the rotten apples and oranges and things people threw away. And then I got really sick. I was living under a flyover in Notting Hill. When I come to, I was in London below. The rats had found me.
Have you ever tried to return to all this? Quiet, warm, inhabited houses, late-night cars, the real world. She shook her head.
All fire burns, little baby. You'll learn. You can't. It's one or the other. Nobody ever gets both.